Morning. I'm calling the meeting of the House Special Committee on Arctic Policy, Economic Development, and Tourism to order. Today is Friday, February 23rd, 2024, and the time is now 8:07 a.m. We are joined by Representative Rauscher, Representative Dybert, and myself, Chair Baker. We just have some presentations this morning, so we do not need a quorum. I'd like to thank our House Record Secretary, Cale Brown, and our LIO moderator, Susan Quigley, and my committee aide, Mike Braun, for all they do for this committee. Before we begin, I'd like to remind the members of the committee and people in the audience to silence your phones or other personal electronics. If anyone in the audience today needs to pass a note to committee members, please get the attention of committee aide, Mike, and he will take care of it. Today, we'll be receiving two presentations. The first will be from Sam Inoka, founder and CEO of GreenSpark. The second presentation will be by Rachel Callender, founder and executive director of Arctic Encounter. Mr. Inoka, please approach the presenter's table, state your name and affiliation for the record, and you may begin.
Good morning, and thanks for having me today. My name is Sam Inoka. I'm the CEO and founder of GreenSpark. I was also born and raised here in North Pole. So I'm originally from Alaska. I went to school, high school at Eielson High School, and went to the University of Alaska Fairbanks, where I got my degree in business in 1995. So I'm pleased to be back here and bringing technology and best practices to Alaska. So my presentation today is about data centers in the cloud. And a lot of folks are kind of unfamiliar with that, but it's a growing need for infrastructure. Not just in Alaska, but in unserved markets everywhere. So GreenSpark's mission is to bridge the digital divide. And our mission means that we are delivering data center infrastructure and cloud infrastructure to unserved markets. You might wonder, just real basic, right off the start, you know, what is a data center? I live and work mainly in San Francisco, but my work does bring me back up here to Alaska. Quite frequently, but in Silicon Valley, if you can imagine buildings the size of multiple football fields, millions of square feet, that house the computers that run the internet. So all of the applications that you know and love, Netflix, Hulu, Office 365, all live on the cloud, and the cloud lives in data centers in primarily major Tier 1 cities. I like to call them NFL cities. So you can think of Seattle, San Francisco, Chicago, Dallas, New York, New Jersey, Atlanta. Major centers of the country serve as the hubs, the backbone of the internet. So these are a few visuals of what you would see if you walked into a building run by Google or Amazon Web Services or Microsoft. What GreenSpark does is we're building data centers at the edge. And if you ask folks what the edge is, even in Silicon Valley, you'd get 10 different answers about what the edge means. But really, the edge is the non-NFL cities. So when you get away from the backbone of the internet, you start to get to the second tier cities and the tertiary markets around the United States. And for all intents and purposes, for those that work, you know, pretty intensely on the internet, everything going north of Seattle is considered the edge. But for our purposes here today, we think of Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau as the edge. But when you literally get to the edge of the world, when you get to Nome, when you get to Kotzebue, when you get to Prudhoe Bay, you're at the farthest reaches of the internet today. And those are the markets that GreenSpark intends to serve. The folks out there need internet and all the applications that we know and love just as badly as the folks in the major markets. So we take the handoff from those cities to bring and improve internet services into the unserved communities. I founded GreenSpark in 2016, and we've been working very hard over the years. In 2019, we were selected to join Launch Alaska's 2020 technology demonstration cohort. So the accelerator based in Anchorage invited us to participate, And of course, in the spring of 2020, the world went off the rails and everyone stayed home for a year, but we did our homework and we started coming back up in the spring of 2021 with our infrastructure. And we started speaking with the folks at Launch Alaska. And I started making the rounds with stakeholders across Alaska, speaking with the telecom carriers, speaking with the large enterprises of oil and gas, the state and federal government, starting to plant the seeds and understand where demand is around Alaska. We're really pleased and excited to announce we launched Alaska's newest data center in December in Cordova, Alaska. So we're working with Cordova Electric, where we've plugged in our data center at their Humpback Creek facility. You can't imagine a company like Amazon or Google or Azure by Microsoft, you know, racing to get to a fishing village, which is a 40-minute flight, right, from Anchorage. And our gear at that point even had to get on a boat, on a landing craft, to get to the power plant where we plugged in. So we're proving that these services can be brought to the farthest to reach and hardest to reach communities in the world. We have additional facilities planned in my hometown of Fairbanks. We're working on one. We're also working on one here in Juneau, hopefully. So if we can really execute to our plan, we'll have one up and running here in downtown. We've also got two facilities planned for Anchorage, one that would be a commercial facility and another one to support the federal government located at the Port of Alaska. We are also in my travels around Alaska, we've also spoken with local investors. There's high interest to invest in this kind of infrastructure. This is infrastructure that's going to be delivered locally, serviced locally. So part of our plan is, in addition to bringing and improving and lowering the cost of internet services here in the state, we're also looking to develop the local workforce that has to service and maintain these assets. Here's a visual of our of the facility that we put into Humpback Creek hydro facility in Cordova. That lower picture on the right, those two cabinets, house 170 kilowatts of IT capacity. So what does that mean? It's roughly 200 little more than that servers capacity could be served out of those two cabinets. Now, if you were to look at one of the local telecom carriers and the capacity that could displace, our two cabinets could take and replace approximately 30 to 40 racks of IT gear in a legacy facility here in Alaska. So we're really excited. It's very dense. It's powered 100% by renewable energy. This particular facility will be there to support Cordova Electric and the applications they use, the Prince William Sound Science Center, the research they're doing, and as well as the local telecom carrier, Cordova Telecom. They all have applications. Every stakeholder in that community have applications that currently live on the cloud in Seattle. So by bringing this infrastructure to Cordova, they're very excited. They're going to have improved lower latency services available in their community.
Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you very much. Through the chair. Latency, what is it?
Latency is the delay in service. So when you're working on an application that lives in Seattle, the round trip for the data to go from your computer, wherever you are in Alaska, over that connectivity to the data center in Seattle to be computed, to have that work product delivered back to you at your desktop, that's latency. So this next slide actually points out an idea of that latency and what happens when you're working in Alaska, the 25 milliseconds it takes to traverse from some point in Alaska over MTA or GCI or ACS's fiber to a middle mile hub, such as Fairbanks or Anchorage or Juneau, and then to get on the backbone fiber that gets all the way to Seattle. So you're looking at somewhere between 100 to 200 milliseconds of one-way travel of that data then for that computation to happen and then come back to your desktop. So when you bring the computer and that computational resource closer, you reduce latency. Why is latency important? So if you are the FAA or air traffic control, or you're trying to fly autonomous drones around the state, you don't want to be relying on infrastructure that's thousands of miles away. You need real-time decision-making capability, data processing and storage, so that those capabilities have near instant reaction. That's latency.
Follow up? So everything is connected through fiber and it doesn't go to a satellite?
Connectivity across Alaska varies. So there are many communities that are connected by fiber, many communities connected by copper, and more communities today are being connected by satellite.
Okay, thank you.
So your question, Representative, is timely. This describes where GreenSpark lives in the ecosystem of infrastructure that provides services to Alaskans. There's the data centers, which we call hyperscale data centers, that house the backbone of the internet, the Googles and the Azures and the Amazon Web Services of the world that live in those tier one cities, that are connected by major backbone networks across the country, that then come down to your local regional hubs, right? So you're thinking about your Anchorages and Fairbankses and Junos, and then even further out to the edge, to the local communities, the Cordovas, the Yakutats, the Nomes and Kotzebues and Bethels.
Representative Rauscher.
Through the chair. Thank you. So is one faster than the other? You've mentioned three different ways. You had copper, you had fiber, and then you had satellite. Is one faster than the other, and if so, by how much?
We like to think about fiber being the fastest, but with the highest fidelity, because it is a physical medium, so you can transfer data through light at the speed of light. That's typically the fastest and most plentiful bandwidth. It's also a lot more costly to lay bandwidth or to lay fiber. Pardon me, than it is to serve these services over satellites. However, satellite communications have bandwidth constraints. So you get a lot less bandwidth, but it can reach a lot further in terms of the communities it can reach without actually laying physical infrastructure. But for our purposes and data centers around the world, you'll find that data centers typically live on fiber.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So every state in the country has a digital equity plan, and I've spent a fair amount of time reviewing Alaska's. And Alaska obviously has challenges. I was familiar growing up in North Pole, Alaska, with these challenges, and many Alaskans still have limited service capabilities in their communities. So not only are services limited, they're very expensive. And, that this creates a lot of inequities for these communities and Alaskans everywhere to participate in today's digital economy. When I started GreenSpark, we thought about what does lowering the cost of this infrastructure mean? What does it mean if you can deliver it into the most difficult communities? What does it mean when you can bring it to market faster than other data center developers? If you're building a traditional data center, it can take years. When Amazon and Microsoft build a new data center, it's usually 3 to 4 years from breaking ground to being able to offer service. Twice in Alaska last year, we deployed our infrastructure in 30 days. And that's really groundbreaking, no pun intended. But when you can be faster and cheaper and greener, that really is the combination of elements that enable you to bridge the digital divide for these communities, to bring new and lower cost services to the folks that need it and want it, just like everybody else. So we're really excited because when we look across Alaska, when we look across the United States, when we look around the world, There are lots of communities that look like Alaska, remote, hard to reach, hard to serve. And that's our mission. Our mission is to bridge the digital divide. And we're starting in Alaska. I couldn't be more pleased, as I mentioned before, to be bringing best practices and new technology to Alaska for Alaskans. The implications for local economic development are important. This will bring jobs to Alaska. This will enable Alaskans to join the digital economy. This will open up opportunities for folks to not necessarily need to leave their village. They can stay in their community and work with the best and newest tools available here in Alaska. So it's been a lot of talk about autonomous systems, AI, ChatGPT, if you've heard of it, but these are all tools now that can be accessible, more readily accessible for Alaskans, and they don't necessarily have to pick up and leave their village to move to a hub community in Alaska to participate in these technologies and these tools. But practically speaking, and I know this will be an interesting point, but what good is a data center in a community like Prudhoe Bay or Ukiakvik or Nome? And as you folks know, there was a service disruption last year. A fiber was cut, and a lot of services were not available to those communities. Now, when you have a disconnected state like that, and the fiber is cut, you lose access to that data. You lose access to those services. But if you have infrastructure, if you have this capability available on the other side. Excuse me, on the other side of the severed fiber, some of those services can continue. It may be in a degraded state, but you still have the ability to compute, to store data, to process data, to continue service of those applications that live on that infrastructure on the far side of that severed fiber. So practically speaking, that's why all communities have an interest to deploy this style of infrastructure.
Representative Rauscher, did you have a question?
Yes, through the chair, thank you. Obviously, I'm into figuring what we're all up to here. So question number one is, you used the word green. How does green fit into this data program, this data structure? And you say more green. I'm trying to understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of ways, and so follow me on this journey, but our infrastructure is highly energy efficient, industry leading, in fact. So the energy efficiency at which we're running our deployments are roughly equal to the same efficiency as a Amazon or a Google in Silicon Valley. When you compare those style of data centers to, say, a data center, a legacy data center at the University of Alaska or in Fairbanks, it's roughly half to a third of the energy required to do the same level of computation and data operations. So simply the reduction of the use of energy, especially in a community like Fairbanks, which is largely coal powered, means that you're using less energy and your emissions from that operation are reduced by that amount. So the carbon footprint, if you will, of our operation is dramatically lower than legacy technology in operation today. So if you were to travel to a village that is powered primarily by diesel generators, and you take the IT operation of that village and you reduce it by half or two thirds, those are real emissions reductions for running your internet operation in that community.
Follow up through the chair. I just want to say thank you. I have to go. I have a presentation in finance, but I do appreciate everything you. It was very fascinating. Thank you very much.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And for the record, Speaker Tilton has joined us at 8:25.
My apologies for being late.
You can continue, Mr. Inoka.
That concludes my presentation, but I'm happy to take more questions from the committee.
Representative Diver.
Yeah, thank you so much for your presentation. This is exciting because I'm really happy that you're from Fairbanks and you know our costs of our cost of living in Fairbanks. So folks in my district, like South Fairbanks, the cost of living is very high. And can you, I don't know if you could answer this or not, but do you know the rates, the differences between what we have now and what the rates of using green spark?
That's a great question. And through the chair, I would start by saying our business model is to provide infrastructure to the service providers themselves. So our mission would be to serve ACS, to serve GCI, to serve MTA, other ISPs in the interior, as well as the major cloud service providers, Amazon and Microsoft and Google, that want to extend their footprint into Alaska. So that is to say that our business model is that we are a wholesaler of infrastructures. We serve the service providers. So there, ultimately, I believe that this would enable them to have lower costs to pass on to the retail customers, and or improve services. So I think early you might not see a change in retail pricing for services. You'd see an improvement in the services. Over time, I think you'd see improved services and potentially lower costs with more choices for customers in that competitive environment for ISP services.
Follow up.
Thank you, through the chair. And another question, I know if you know Fairbanks, there's like pockets, like little small pockets. Most homes have access to the internet. And I know like around Goldstream, in District 35, there's these little pockets where you, like my friends, where my friends live, they don't have access. And so this would help address that.
Well, and through the chair, thank you for that question. Our infrastructure would enable service providers to at least have a more efficient hub in Fairbanks, in Anchorage, in different communities. The last mile of connectivity will always be a challenge for the service provider. So those pockets that you're talking about may not have improved services because of the gear that we bring to Fairbanks, but the connections that it might enable for ACS or GCI or whatever other local ISP is there, that's the opportunity, right? Is for a transformation in their business model through lower costs for them to make the decision. Let's invest more fiber. Let's invest in more cable to get out to these pockets that don't have service.
Any questions, Representative Tilton?
No, I'm good. Thank you. I'm so sorry I was so late today.
If there's no further questions, which I don't believe there are, thank you, Mr. Inoka. We'll be sure to reach out if we have any follow-ups. Your presentation has been distributed to the rest of the members of the committee. So thank you for coming down today. We will now take a brief at ease to set up for the next presentation.
Rachel, can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. We have some technical difficulties.
We are back on the record. Mrs. Callender, can you please place your name and affiliation on the record and begin your presentation? And we do have someone sitting at the table here that if you just let us know when to change slides, we'll keep up with you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for having me here today. I'm presenting on behalf of Arctic Encounter. My name is Rachel Callender, for the record. And I'm not sure if you can see the first slide, but I'm ready to begin if that's prepared.
Yes, please. You may begin.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you all for having me. As you can see on the first slide, Arctic Encounter, our tagline for our organization, which is a 501c3 NGO based in Anchorage, is that our mission is to raise awareness, engage challenges, and develop solutions in and for the Arctic region. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, my name is Rachel Kalander. I am the founder and CEO of Arctic Encounter, and I also serve as the honorary consul of Iceland to Alaska, a position appointed by the government of Iceland, which has been very rewarding as Iceland continues to seek partnerships and opportunities with Alaska and the Arctic here. I was born and raised in Cordova, Alaska, in a commercial fishing family, and now live in Anchorage, where I own and operate two other businesses, in addition to my role with Arctic Encounter. I'm proud to be raising two toddlers, or young Alaskans, who spend their time between Cordova and Anchorage. And I'm here today because 10 years ago I founded this organization, which has over that time, due to incredible support from many Alaskans, become the largest Arctic event in North America. And there are a few major themes that I think we can consider here today in this discussion. These are that Arctic networks are growing and changing rapidly. Arctic geopolitics, as you know, are also shifting significantly. And networks are, as you also know, important to getting good work done because they build hubs of influence, investment, and problem solving. So that is one angle of impact that Arctic Encounter strives to solve through our platforms. Next slide, please. So how will Alaska respond and how can Alaska lead? As Alaskans, we are far more aware of the significance of the Arctic. The U.S. is one of 8 Arctic nations because of Alaska, and I'm happy to share that Arctic Encounter hosts the international community and experts from across the world and the U.S., but we also strive earnestly to support Alaska and its opportunities long into the future. For the 2024 convening coming up in April in Anchorage, a few of the Alaskans we have confirmed so far as expert participants are the commissioners of the Department of Natural Resources and Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Lieutenant Governor Dahlstrom, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, ICC Alaska leadership, the former Lieutenant Governor Treadwell, Dr. Ann Zink, Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, the Heritage Center, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and many more. And we were thrilled to have a significant participation from many of your colleagues in the legislature at the events last year. Next slide, please. So as the largest annual Arctic meeting in North America, I am thrilled to share a little bit about our footprint in Alaska every spring at our flagship event, which I believe is the primary reason that I was invited to speak today. This year, Arctic Encounter will take place April 10th to 12th in Anchorage. We also host a trip to Utqiagvik with VIPs in the days following the convening in Anchorage. For the Anchorage event, we rent out the entire Denina Center for 3 days, host the Far North Fashion Show at the Anchorage Museum, which in recent years has been an all-Indigenous fashion show and a celebration of culture across Alaska, as well as a showcase with performances and dialogues at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts. Next slide, please. So as an Alaska-based NGO, we also foster international partnerships and build platforms for these dialogues in other countries. Arctic Encounter Paris took place in 2015, which was a 3-day convening during the UN Convention on Climate. Arctic Encounter London happened, there's a typo on that slide, I apologize, but happened obviously in the UK in 2019. And we've also hosted events in Iceland in 2018, 2019, 2022, and 2023. Each of those international platformed events featured global leaders as well as Alaskan leaders. So as an Alaskan born and raised here, that's very important to me and I'm proud of that. At the convening last year in Anchorage in 2003, Sam Tan, the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Singapore, said on stage, quote, "What happens in the Arctic does not stay in the Arctic." He went on to describe the critical ways in which Singapore is affected by changes in the Arctic and is interested in changes in commerce in the Arctic. So every year we're seeing increasing international participation in Arctic Encounter and more international leaders confirming their participation and traveling to Alaska to speak. And the reason I wanted to share this quote by this leader from Singapore, stated in Anchorage last year, is just, you know, it points out, does a good job in a few simple words to point out the significance of Alaska's location in the Arctic and in the world on many fronts, but also why Alaska has so many opportunities to lead in this space. Next slide, please. So this slide is really just meant to give you a flavor of the event, the ways in which we celebrate culture and the arts, but also feature very serious and hopefully impactful conversations. I also wish to outline for you the international participation this year in April in Anchorage, which, as you can see, I'll run through the list quickly. You know, the United States, Canada, United Kingdom, European Union. We have the ambassador of the European Union for the whole of the European Union to the U.S. attending, ministers from Norway and the United Kingdom, ambassadors from Estonia, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Croatia, Lithuania, Latvia, Ireland, Hungary, Belgium, Portugal, Chile, Tuvalu, Japan, Finland, Greenland, Poland, Denmark, and Scotland. So as you can imagine, many of these countries are in the Arctic and share the challenges and aspirations and big questions that Alaskans have for the Arctic and what's to come, but also many countries that seek to collaborate with Alaska, and I think that's very exciting. Something else I wanted to point out that's not itemized on this slide, but I think is important, is that, as you know, local leadership is critical to problem solving and passing smart policies so that once they're implemented, they really are creating the solutions or the benefits for the people who will experience them on the ground. And you encounter that every single day in your roles in the legislature. So I wanted to share something I'm excited about insofar as local leadership that will take place on the debate stage at Arctic Encounter this year, is that we have the mayors of Tromsø, Norway, Rovaniemi, Finland, Tornio, Finland, Utqiagvik here in Alaska, Kotzebue in Alaska, the Northwest Arctic Borough, and also the mayor of Akureyri, Iceland. Leadership from the local level is just as critical as the leaders that we invite that represent Alaska on a statewide basis, members of Congress, as well as federal level ambassadors and other roles. So we really do strive to strike the balance, as well as including tribal leadership and others. Next slide, please. So why are all of these leaders traveling to Anchorage in April for this discussion? I think that you already know this, but for those who might be tuning in, it's worth reiterating that this is because Alaska is critical to advancing Arctic policy, the future of business in the far north, investment in the far north, emergency and environmental response, and resilience, and so much more. The global community acknowledges Alaska's role in U.S. Arctic policy and also the strategic location for future commerce through the Arctic. Next slide, please. So we know that the Arctic is the most rapidly changing region on the planet. In fact, it's changing at a rate of 3 times the speed. And Alaska's First Peoples know this very well and are leading in that resilience and adaptation. There are an unlimited number of ways to talk about the Arctic and Alaska's role, but here are just 10 considerations, some of which apply directly to your special committee. So Russia, U.S., and China geopolitics, that is a major topic, considering the war in Ukraine and other considerations at our events. Increasing ship traffic near and in Alaskan waters. The Greenland mineral debate actually flows over to many considerations in Alaska and other states where there needs to be federal and indigenous conversations about responsible development, as well as considerations for foreign investment, which is a big topic in Greenland. Multilateral military operations, which Alaska has benefited from and been a leader in, Arctic tourism, which I know you consider every day on your special committee, infrastructure development, as we see on this slide with Alaska's Port of Nome. I did include a quote there, a headline from the Associated Press, which if you just Google some of these topics, you can see that not just Alaska, but the Arctic in general is taking up global and national media headlines every day. Major investment interests in the far north are occurring and advancing. We recently saw, you know, a Fairbanks native, a Fairbanks resident, appointed to be the first Arctic ambassador, or SAO, to the United States. Our very own University of Alaska is known to be a global leader. In fact, I believe the most cited Arctic research in the world comes from our university. So research investments, and then, of course, energy and critical security discussions are being considered and taking place worldwide as a result. Next slide, please. This image really speaks for itself and is not indicating anything that you aren't well aware of as Alaska's legislators. Alaska is the front line in monitoring response and innovation for the U.S. Air Force, as well as other branches insofar as Arctic security is concerned for the United States. And Alaska can really continue to serve as a global leader in this area. And I know that we're all very proud of our service members living here in Alaska. Next slide, please. I'll explain this slide a little bit. So as someone who grew up here in Alaska in a small community, and as an Alaskan raising two young children here, I think a lot about how we engage young people. And I know that that's been a fabulous feature of the Alaska legislature insofar as helping to create career advancement opportunities for young people. I know that I myself had the pleasure of serving in the legislature the year before I went to law school, and it was a wonderful experience for me. So a few things that we do to include young people. In the past, we used to do Arctic Youth Initiative surveys. The quote you see here is from, I believe he was 7 or 8 years old when he wrote this, but the reason you can tell it's the handwriting of a child is we had almost every single student from the school on Little Diomede participate in a survey. This is one quote that we pulled from those responses, but he said, "What would you like them to know about your community?" Said, "We're being affected so bad that we lost our abilities to do things we need to do to survive." You are intimately aware of some of the challenges with adaptation and resilience due to the rapid changes in the Arctic, but there are also opportunities. And this is something we strive to tackle at Arctic Encounter. One of the ways we're increasing, hopefully, youth participation and opportunities that are meaningful to them and their futures is this year we launched the inaugural fellowship program that we're calling Northern Vision Fellowship Program. And for those of you who might be able to attend and participate Arctic Encounter this year, don't be surprised if we ask you to have a private meeting with our fellowship cohort, which will be featuring young Alaskans in their 20s, as well as potentially international young leaders from other countries or regions throughout the far north in their 20s. So next slide, please. This concludes my presentation. I'm happy to take any questions and would welcome your participation and expertise and engagement at any level, whether that's during a convening in the future or outside of production. And our organization strives to be useful and helpful to you as state leaders insofar as problem solving and collaboration goes between U.S. federal opportunities with Alaska as well as international. And I just thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Kalander. I really appreciate you coming and speaking for the committee today. Do we have any questions, comments for Ms. Kalander? Representative Dibert?
Thank you, through the chair. Good morning, Ms. Callender. Thank you so much for your presentation. And I didn't get to make it to Arctic Encounter last year, so this year I hope to make it. I had a conflict, and it looks amazing. I heard really great things about it from last year. Mine is more just like a comment. I like the long list of folks that are going to be attending. And one, you know, like when I think about the Arctic and our small communities, I think our elders in the communities are the ones that have seen change in our communities from the effects of, you know, the changes here in the Arctic. So I just like make sure that they're included when we talk about the changes. You know, I love this little child's comment, what the child has seen, but to also include what elders have seen, a change in these discussions on how we come up with policy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, thank you so much for that comment. I agree with you. That's critical. We do lean on our sort of partners, especially within the Indigenous communities, to refer and recommend speakers that would well represent diverse opinions in their communities, but I'll be sure to take that back to those partners. And we also offer a scholarship opportunity. Last year we launched that, and this year we'll be launching that again here in the coming days. That pertains, last year it applied to rural residents, elder, and youth. Because we now have this whole separate youth opportunity that has an open application, and we're modifying that scholarship opportunity for participation, it would be free at cost to admitted scholarship recipients. And that will this year just be modified slightly to be for elders and rural residents. So thank you so much for that feedback. I agree with you. It's critical.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Sure. Yes, Representative Diver.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Callender, one other thought in your presentation. The university, I loved your comment on the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Do you know there's discussions down here in the legislature about tier one, making it a tier one university? Do you have any thoughts, or do you know where that is in discussions with this, with the program? Thank you.
Through the chair, thank you for that question. I wish I knew the answer. I don't have the specifics in my mind on the exact implications of that discussion. We work really closely with the university, and they are one of our top sponsors, and also are featured throughout the conference as experts and as partners. But I don't know the details on that or what the implications would be.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dibert. Seeing no other questions from the committee, thank you again, Mrs. Callender. I know I'm going to do everything I can to attend Arctic Encounter this year. If there's any questions or follow-up, we'll be sure to reach out. Your presentation has been distributed to the rest of the committee. So again, thank you for your time. And thank you, everyone, for participating today. Our next meeting has not been yet scheduled. Please check on BASIS for the next committee announcement. So with that, having no further business for the committee, we're adjourned at 8:53 a.m. Thank you.